Good morning to honorable members. Good morning to our guests. Chairperson, we received apologies from the following members. Honorable Yabo, we received an apology from honorable Pile. He will be joining the meeting a bit late. We also received an apology from honorable Zondo, who is unable to attend the meeting, as well as honorable Mukhale. Thank you, Chair. Sorry, Chair, as well as the minister who is currently abroad. Thank you.
Because of the nature of the portfolio that it is, that speaks directly to the needs of citizens of this country, speaks directly to the livelihood of citizens of this country. And we are hoping as a portfolio committee that as you present these plans to us, we will see some sort of attempt to take into consideration our reflections, our observations, our recommendations coming from the previous annual performance reports. We are hoping that we will see an attempt by the department to consider our engagements from the various quarterly reports, because that's what they're about, right? So when you give us a report and we say, why didn't you do this? You could have done this better. Next time you should do that. It should reflect in the plans that are to come for the future. We also need to see plans that speak directly to the audit action plan and what the AG has been saying. So in our planning now for the year, the DHET and its entities need to show us how you have intentionally taken such into consideration. We need targets that speak directly to the needs of citizens of this country. We need targets that speak to the expansion of the PSET sector. We need targets that speak to how we're going to support that expansion. Expansion is not only enrollment. Expansion also means that in terms of infrastructure, how do we support that? In terms of budget, how do we support that? In terms of lecturers, how do we support that? In terms of security, how do we support that? In terms of load shedding, we have load shedding now. We know many institutions need to have sustainable energy in order for the teaching and learning program to continue. Have we factored that in our planning going into this next financial year? We've been going on and on about the CET program, on and on about the TVET program. Have we been deliberate about it? When we looked into the presentations on the state of readiness for the 2023 academic year, DDG Zulu clearly said that the demand is increasing. So the hard work that the DM has been doing to raise awareness on the possibilities that are there within the TVET program is paying off. Young people now want to go to TVET colleges. But we don't have the capacity. Have we planned for that? We must be able to see that yes, this year, this is how many students we were able to accommodate. These are our plans for us to accommodate more going into the 2024 academic year. NASFAS, we need to be able to see that. What are the plans of the department to strengthen the work of NASFAS? I think the department must bring us into confidence. Yes, NASFAS has its role to play, but the department must also plan on how it will strengthen NASFAS, because you are the immediate oversight body on NASFAS before they even come to us as a committee. So those are some of the things that we're hoping we're going to see as we interact with the plans of the department. And of course, the AG will also give us their reflections on whether or not they think that the plans of the department will speak to favorable outcomes in the end when they then have to report. So we are excited to receive the briefing from the Department of Higher Education and Training and its entities, and also look forward to hopefully making meaningful recommendations that will assist the department and its entities in the work that it has to do. With that being said, I'll hand over to yourself, Minister Ngesi, and then we will go to the AG, CHE, and then the department. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson and honorable members, Deputy Minister Manamela, the DG, and the senior officials. Well, on behalf of Minister Nzimande, I'll make these brief opening remarks and, of course, hand over to the Deputy Minister and the DG and the senior managers of the department to present the annual performance plan for the 23-24 financial year. Of course, Chair, we are honored to be afforded the opportunity to present the departmental annual performance plans and the budget for 23-24 financial year. And this financial year is a critical financial year for all government departments departments and for the sixth administration in particular, as the government winds up on its commitment of the medium-term strategic framework. In February this year, the Minister of Finance shared with the nation the positive trajectory on the economic recovery, but he also showed that the medium-term growth outlook has actually declined. So as we talk about expansionary fiscal policies, we're talking about expansionary expenditure. We need to say, how do we balance that with the shrinking revenue? That is a fact. Which areas do we upscale? Which areas do we have to cut down? An indication that the country continues to face huge financial risks that are compounded by the weakening finances of the SOEs. The SOEs, which were very central to artisan development, to our youth. Thousands of people were trained at Eskom, at Denel. You can mention all of these SOEs, but today that is not there. The higher public service wage bill, the high debt levels, the load shedding challenges, the combined impacts of these will definitely make it difficult for any department to ask for additional budget. Hence, therefore, a balancing act is going to be important. I've said this, maybe sometimes this will be unpopular. I've said when you look at, you talk about money for training in this country from the side of government, there's no shortage. What is lacking? It's integration, coordination. You look at what the CETAs are having. You look at what the labor activation is having under the UIF. You find a lot of duplication of programs which are said to be training. People running away with millions, which are a joke. 3 months training, 6 months training, and that money is gone. After that, those young people have nowhere to go. But if the departments were to come with integrated programs, we can be able to massifying the resources. That's one area which the DG next to me knows about it, the Deputy Minister. There's a program which we're trying to plan with higher education, with DAF, with small businesses, with, who else is there? But it's about 5 departments. The intention is to massify for the young people who are unemployed. But if we can move out of our silos, we think that there's a lot which we can be able to create. But the problem is government systems. What you can do in the private sector, within a month in government, it can take you a year. And you will be told about all the obstacles. So I'm just making that as an example. The department will equally be impacted, particularly as it tries to expand this public service sector education over the medium term. At the same time, it's mindful of the high expenditures of the nation that we serve. And for this reason, the department will continue to reprioritize within its existing budget and put controls in place to address the inefficiencies. You will notice, Chair and honorable members, that when it comes to this one, I speak with passion as if I've been running this department. It is because we've long been talking about it with Minister Nzimande, Minister Stella Ndabeni Abrams, Minister Didiza, Minister Kubai. We've long been talking about this. It's our officials now. And I think it's in your interest to demand reports on progress in relation to this area, given the millions of the unemployed in our country. especially the young people. Notwithstanding the challenges it faces, the department will continue to support young people to access, of course, the CETA system. For instance, in plan to increase the enrollment of the PSET institutions from 439,659, which is in 2023-24, to 559,884 in 25-26. And also increasing the number of the universities and TVET students receiving funding through NASFAS, through those NASFAS barriers over the MTF. But I think the challenge is very clear. How do we deal with the quality of spending in terms of those bursaries? But it must be linked to the students' progress. It can't be people who want to be at the university forever and still want to be supported by government. We need to put very stringent rules. The department will also be finalizing the concept designs for the construction of the two universities in Ekurhuleni in Hammanskraal, the multi-purpose center in Kiana, the satellite campus in Lulundi. Along this, the department will implement the student accommodation projects for the provision of the 28,000 student beds over the MTF. I've always said, given my background to public works, to me, this is a low-hanging fruit. Because you have a lot of government buildings which are underutilized. This is one area we have to look at very, very seriously. Because it's just about the renovations. And we're giving to the, some emerging black, what you call property people, who have never had any of the opportunities. Because you know what is happening in the property in this particular country. It's still under the control of those who have monopolized that particular space. So while this is not enough, it is indeed a step in the right direction as the department continues with the efforts towards supporting expansions. Artisan development remains one of the key priorities, and in this regard, there is a plan, which I think the DG can be able to talk about, of 30,000 artisans in the TVET. And I think this is an area which the Deputy Minister has always been passionate about, around the issue of the TVET. Learners in the skills development programs will also increase for 22-23, and they will increase in 25-26. With regards to student funding policy, Minister Nzimande has committed to submit to the Cabinet clear proposals on the comprehensive student funding policy based on consultations that have been concluded with the Banking Associations of South Africa and the proposed government guarantee scheme. And I think, Chairperson and honorable members, we can't deal with these issues in piecemeal. Whenever there's pressure of a strike, we have to do something in the universities. I think this thing which you're saying, a comprehensive policy, is very important. And the biggest challenge also is the missing middle. The missing middle, you talk about the public servants as an example. You see this thing of acting in many departments, it's a disadvantage, but it's also an exposure. Just one example which is not related to this. You talk housing, majority, I mean public servants do not qualify in the banks to loan houses, they do not qualify in the RDP. We've been trying to come up with a particular scheme. They are like the missing middle. And if you can't protect the core of your public servants, the police, the teachers, the nurses, then what else? Because they are the core of delivering the services. Same with the issue of funding their children to go to university, which has become so expensive. And this debate around the pensions access whilst people are still there, I think it should be put in the package. Can it not be accessible for them to take their children also as loans to the university? So hence we must be comprehensive when we deal with this matter instead of dealing it with a piecemeal. So Chairperson, the unfortunate and horrible instances of gender-based gender-based violence and murder in some of our higher education institutions targeting female students and staff is of great concern. And one particular example is also, even if it's not a gender-based violence, but just gender violence in general. Look at the example of this accountant student in the University of the Western Cape just recently. It's very unfortunate. Those are the great minds which we are trying to build. The minister is engaging them with the VCs, the TVET college principals, including the security trust, upon the minimum norms and standards for safety and security to ensure a safe and a secure campus environment for staff and students and visitors. While higher education is continuing to provide the psychosocial and related student support services, Minister Nzimande will be launching Transforming Men Mentalities. It's men mentalities, but it's mentalities initiative, which will be a multi-stakeholder partnership with the PSEC system on mobilizing men with the PSEC system to be part of championing a world free of gender bias, of gender stereotypes and violence and discrimination. So in this regard, this multi-sectoral PSEC task team will be established to implement the initiative as part of the many initiatives to combat GBV within PSEC. Maybe the universities need to be conscientized themselves to start running special programs for all students on this question, if they are not already doing it. It must be just a massive contentization program for all students. So, Chair and Honorable Members, I trust I've just indicated the stride made encouraging the skills and competency-based curriculum for future jobs and lifelong development that the PSET institutions are implementing. It's an intention of the Minister and the Department to continue this partnership with industry to produce skills needed by the different economic sectors. I've heard you very well, Chairperson. The TVETs would be useless without the partnership with the industry. And it's something which we must just enforce. They will be useless without the partnership with the industry, because those are the practical skills which we need. Well, I will invite the Deputy Minister, if anything to say, or he will talk to the questions, and the DG maybe to lead the presentation. But I know that you have a particular proposal you have made, Chairperson, who will respect that we will start and so on. Maybe the Deputy Minister would want to say something. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do you have
I'm good, Chair.
All right. That's all my DM. DM says he's fine, guys. Thank you so much to Minister Nkosi for those opening remarks. We note that you will have to leave at some point. I don't know if members would want to raise any matter, or we can just move to the presentations and engage at a later stage. Okay. All right, so we'll move to presentations. Our first presentation is going to come from the AGSA. I'd like to just implore on all colleagues, like, those first few slides of vision, mission, those slides, colleagues, as members have gone through the presentation. So if we can leave those out and sort of focus really on what we're trying to communicate through our presentation. So then at that point, it's now 9:32, I think the AG has been given just about 40 minutes or so to make their presentation. I'm not sure who's... Okay, Ms. Ahmad. Okay. Ms. Machaman is leading the delegation as the deputy business leader. She is with Uzama, Mashang Mdidra, who we're very familiar with, and Mr. Makitla as well. So I'd like to hand over to you, colleagues.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. Good morning to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, the DG, and the Department. Yes, we're here to share with you. It's two aspects of the presentation. The first part of the presentation is really just to highlight to you the changes in our strategy as an office since our new AG, Zakani Maluleka, was appointed. We thought it would be very critical that we reflect on our strategy as an office and see where do we go from here and how do we assist in improving our democracy as a country. And our strategy is until 2030, so I'll just do highlights. I'm cognizant of time. And then I'll hand over to Zama Shangu just to give you the observations we had on when we did the review of the 2023-24 annual performance report reviews. Annual performance plan reviews of the entities in the department. I will start on slide 4. Just on our strategy, just to highlight that we needed to look at our mandate, just to reflect a bit more on our mandate. We also wanted to benchmark with what's happening in international Supreme Audit institutions in terms of what do they focus on. One of the things that we noted is that a number of areas in our constitution, quite a number of areas in the international environment is forcing us to focus more on making a difference in the lives of our citizens. So as we report, we needed to then reflect more. As you know from our office, we are chartered accountants in the main, we are auditors, so we do focus more on what is in the financial statements, what have you reported on. But we wanted to take a step back and say, what is there more? So what? Once we've reported and we say you didn't achieve a specific target, what does that mean for the citizens? What does that mean out there? When you are planning, what does it mean? Is it going to impact, is it going to touch the lives of South Africans? So we then re-looked at our strategy, and we thought that we could invest more in terms of that. And one of our areas that we also wanted to focus on is that in order for us to then say these are the insights that we have in terms of whether you are impacting the lives of our citizens, we also needed to focus on shifting the public sector culture. So if we look at our audit outcomes in the past, you'll see that we've always reported irregular expenditure. We've always reported on fruitless and wasteful, but we're not getting traction. Our expanded mandate has now been effective for 3 years, so we are starting to see fruits coming from that, but want to see a bit more vigorous, more improvement in terms of the culture, in terms of how a government shows up to work every day, how our controls are embedded in the environment. And part of our strategy also then focuses on getting those insights, but also then on the enforcement. So if you go to where we are at the moment today, so if you look at today, you'll see that a lot of the government entities are sitting in the doing harm and the doing nothing. So which means that you are either having qualified audits or unqualified audits with findings in most of the critical areas like your irregular, your fruitless and wasteful. Very few are sitting in the doing good. And when we say doing good, we're saying you are having your credible financial statements, credible performance reports. You are also making a difference in terms of your mandate. And you'll see that there's quite very, very few sitting where they are. So in terms of our strategic aspiration, we want to be more stronger, more direct, and more consistent in improving the lived reality of ordinary South Africans. And we want to do this as efficiently as well through gaining insights and influencing the executive leadership the DGs influencing portfolio committees to say that if you plan this way, we will then start seeing improvement in the lives of South Africans. So if we look at 2030, where we want to be, we would really appreciate if we do end up with most of our entities sitting in the doing good. So meaning your financial statements are credible, your performance reports are credible, and you are also driving the mandate that you need to drive. So that is our inspiration, and we want to do this through also looking at the accountability ecosystem. So looking at, is everybody playing their role? So are officials coming to work, doing their jobs in accordance with the financial discipline in terms of adhering to controls in an ethical manner? Is senior management reviewing? Is senior management holding officials accountable? Is the accounting officers and accounting authority also playing their role in terms of overseeing, in terms of making sure controls are designed, are also implemented? We also want to see the executive authorities also playing their role in terms of their oversight and monitoring the functions of the portfolio that they're in charge of. We also like to see the audit committees and internal audits playing their role in terms of providing that additional assurance that reports that are produced are credible and reliable. We're also going to do when you look at our general report that we produce every year, we're also going to lift up some of these entities that are supposed to also do their support and their oversight. So your National Treasury, your Public Service and Administration, your DPME, as well as we would like to also reflect on the role of Parliament, which is the Portfolio Committees and SCOPA, just to give a sense of are we doing what we are required to do, and where we are not, what is it that we can then recommend to improve the oversight. And what we are saying is that eventually we want to see an active citizenry. We want to see us impacting, as well as the Auditor General, the lives of the ordinary South Africans. So, with that said, and those highlights, this is our 6 strategic aspirations over the next few years until 2030. So the first one is sustainability. I know you can't see the screen, it's cutting it off a bit. But the first one is sustainability. So we are saying that we will do all of this, we're inspired to do it, but we want to do it looking at within the constraints of the audit. We want to develop and have the resources that are there. So you'll see that as we continue our conversations in 2030, you might not be sitting with me and Zama, but we might also be sitting with doctors. We might be sitting with professors in the education sector. So that is our aspiration now. So the conversation is not only about financial statements, but really is there an impact? And that's what we want to see. So we are configuring ourselves in that manner already, starting at the stage at the office. The second one is to bring insights. So when we come to portfolio committee, we did this for the first time last year as well. We brought you an analysis of the CETA landscape in terms of your data and analysis within the CETA. So we want to expand on that and give you a bit more insights in terms of what is happening in the environment. Yes, we are. In terms of the insights, I think some of the challenges we do sit on is definitely the systems. In government, the systems are definitely not as integrated as we want to be. So it makes it difficult to do data analysis. And that data analysis is key because that's your story. That's actually what's happening. So some of the challenges we are seeing, we are finding ways to overcome that so that we do get the data and make sure that we clean it up so that it is credible. So that we can give you the story that is out there. Efficiently, we just wanted to, in this one we're saying that don't be concerned in terms of the audit fee, so we are trying to balance it in terms of making sure that our resources are focused on both the audit and the service delivery, but without increasing our audit fee, so we're not going to charge the entities any more exorbitant fees from this new strategy. In terms of influence, we're saying that once we've gained the insights, we've given it to you, We are wanting to influence you to implement the recommendations that we bring, and also make the changes that we are bringing to you. And then I'm just going to skip the fifth one and just go to enforcement. Here, our powers have been expanded. So if you look at our general report, we do have quite a number of entities that are sitting in the material irregularity. We are in a stage where we'll probably see some of the areas going to court because of the certificate of debt process now that will go in. Because if you look at the material irregularity, once we've notified an institution of a material irregularity, it does, the lifespan does take about 2 to 3 years until we get to that last stage for the certificate of debt. So we want to, we're continuing with that enforcement in terms of following up on our material irregularities and also finding them in the environments that we are auditing. Eventually, we are saying that we would like to shift the public sector culture where it's got the characteristics of transparency, integrity, and accountability. So I thought, let me share that with you so that when you do hear Takani talk about it, you're also familiar with it as a portfolio. You can also reflect on it. You can also hold us to account when we come to you. and we can see this coming to life in 2030. I'm going to hand over to Zama just to take you through the observations from our proactive review of the APPs. For the DHEAD and its entities, and then we can take it from there. Go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Michelle. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to the honourable members, the minister, the deputy minister, DG, and all members present. So I'll just take you through the presentation of our observation when we looked at the annual performance reports of the department and its entities. So we looked at all the APPs. This is excluding NSSAS. Just briefly, just the objective of the proactive review, why we actually initiated this process is basically as an early warning regarding the usefulness of the indicators that are actually being set and the targets being set at the different APPs. We focus on looking at whether the indicators and targets are actually meeting the SMART criteria. I'll take you through what we mean by the SMART criteria, and that they actually meet the framework. At this point in time, we're not looking at the detail of whether what they're reporting is actually supported by supporting documentation. We're just looking at the annual performance reports. So when we talk about SMART targets, we're talking about a target that would be specific. And that's looking at whether the nature and the required level of the performance can actually be measured and clearly identified, whether it's measurable, whether the performance, the required performance, you can actually measure that performance requirement, whether it's achievable, which speaks about whether that actual target is actually realistic, whether it's relevant, it's time bound, which means there's time periods, deadlines of when that actual target is actually meant to be achieved. What we also look at whether those indicators that are actually being set in those APPs are actually meeting the characteristics of a good performance indicator. And when we look at that in terms of the framework, we look at whether they are reliable, whether it must be accurate enough to for its intended use and respond to the actual changes that may happen, whether it's verifiable, whether it's appropriate, well-defined, where we're still finding a lot of issues on. I'll take you through the actual findings, which basically speaks about whether they have clear and ambiguous definitions so that the person can actually understand what is actually being planned in those APPs, whether they're cost-effective and relevant, which speaks to whether they speak directly to the mandate of the institution, and then also the different strategies of government, whether the indicators that are being set are actually speaking to that and that they are relevant. So our observation, we first did a small roadmap, which basically looked at all the different planning documents that are actually in place in the higher education space, before you get to the point of an actual performance plan. So we're looking at whether the indicators and targets that are being set in the APPs actually speaks or are aligned to the different planning documents that are there in the higher education space. Specifically on this one, we focused on the APPs that are actually in the CETAs, whether you know it takes into account the sector skills plans that are there, the new growth paths, the national skills development plan, also looking at what was the strategies or the plans in terms of the NDP. There's a scarce skills list that would be in the WSPs. There's also different research papers that are actually there in the higher education space. There's also service level agreements that would be there between the CETAs and the Department of Higher Education with specific things that should be focused by the CETAs with regards to the areas in which they specialize in. Other documents that we look at, the MTSF, you know, the Human Resource Development Strategy of South Africa, the Sector Skills Plan. So we looked at all these different documents and seeing whether the annual performance plans, when I spoke about, we look at whether the indicators and targets are actually relevant, we look at whether they're actually aligned to these different documents, which speaks to the actual strategies of government with regards to the higher education portfolio. So that is what we look at. So we're not just looking at whether there's targets and indicators meeting the framework, but also looking at alignment with the different government strategies that are in place and making sure that the APPs, they're not just being set, whether they're actually going to be having an impact on the actual citizens of South Africa, like Michelle has indicated when we spoke about the strategy. So the process that we looked at, that we followed when we did the annual performance reports, we selected programs that are linked to the mandate of the institutions. We assessed them for usefulness of the planned indicators, which basically looks at whether they're smart and they meet the characteristics of a good indicator, like I took you through now. We looked at, you know, the SLAs that the CETAs would have with the department and have look at the alignment between what they have in the APPs and the SLAs. We communicated these findings, recommendations to the NDP, and then we also shared the findings with the department. You'd note that we've also included when we submitted the PAC to the committee is that we had an annexure, and you'd see that a lot of the findings that we actually are going to be taking you through have actually been addressed. That's because we went through a process of communicating with the leadership of the institutions, and certain changes were made on the APPs. So majority of the ones that you would actually be sitting with yourselves would actually have already taken those into consideration because of the process that would have unfolded. Now looking at the observations when it comes to usefulness, so the areas that we have identified deficiencies on would be regarding measurability. And our observations, which is actually similar to what we actually had communicated even in the prior year, and I think the main root cause in this area would actually be speaking to the review processes that would be taking place before these APPs are actually taken, are finalized. So we're still finding that there's indicators that are not well-defined, where some of the indicators were not clearly defined and not specific. So the technical indicator definition would not be clear on what is the objective of that particular indicator so that it can actually be measurable. Some indicators did not have technical indicator definitions, which is quite important that that element is included so that a user can be able to understand what is the intention of the indicator that is being set and how it can be measured. Performance indicators were not verifiable, so we found that there's deficiencies in the technical indicator definitions, certain areas not included, for example, where the means of verifications were not necessarily clear on the actual technical indicator definition. The definitions were not actually aligned to the method of calculation because the technical indicator definition would have different aspects, which all in all defines that whole indicator for a person to actually understand and be able to measure and calculate what it is that they're wanting to achieve. So we noted some of these deficiencies in that particular area. There was misalignment between what would be in the indicator and what would be in the technical indicator definitions. We found that some targets were not specific, no clear targets for youth and persons with disabilities, it is something that we also look at to see that do you have a specific focus in these particular areas as required by the framework. So we found that there were targets that were not time-bound, so some indicators would not be specific on the actual deadline of when they'll be achieving this, so that it can be measured to see if they're actually achieving when they should be achieving that. Some of the indicators did not have targets over the medium term as it is required. So these are the observations that we actually identified when looking at the measurability of the indicators and the targets that were on the APPs. Now looking at consistency, because we also look at the consistency between the plan, the different planning documents, which would be your strategic documents, your APPs, or the quarterly targets that would be there in the actual APPs. So we found that there was actually some inconsistencies within the planning documents, between the strategic plan and the APPs, inconsistencies between the annual targets and the quarterly targets within the APPs, discrepancies noted in the breakdown of the APP targets, also in the strategic plan. So basically this is what we identified looking at the measurability and consistency of the indicators. And if you look at just the detail of what it is that we're saying have been reported, it just speaks to the review processes, because it's things that where they were actually able to even make adjustments to, which just means that there was an oversight in terms of identifying these issues when the review process at the different levels in the institutions were taking place, so that by the time we get and review, we're not actually picking up these instances. Like I indicated, we also looked at the SLAs that the department would have with the CETAs, and this is in terms of Section 10A of the SDA. So it's actually a legislative requirement that they have these agreements with the CETAs, which basically is to, identify areas that they should, the different CETAs within their specific fields should be focusing on. And we are finding that there's a lot of misalignments between, there was a lot of misalignments between what is there in the SLAs and what is actually filtering through in the APPs, which it basically indicates that some of the things that would have been identified as a focus by the department and not actually ending up as a focus in those particular CETAs. So that's what we identified with regards to the misalignment between what is on the SLAs and the APPs. So with that, we also just, an example, some of the examples, we identified quite a lot, if you look at the annexes, of the things that would not necessarily be coming through in the APPs, but we just wanted to highlight these ones that we are put through, because, like you indicated, Honorable Chair, that, there's specific focuses that should be there by the department to capacitate the TVET, section together with the CETs. And some of the indicators that would be there by the department would actually be, the intention is to capacitate these, the TVET colleges, the CET space as well. So if we're finding that there's these indicators that should actually be filtering through in the APPs of the CETAs to actually assist in capacitating these areas, that's where we wanted to highlight. So you'd find that there was a need that was identified by the department that some of the CETAs would have the indicators like your number of TVET lecturers exposed to the industry through skills programs, number of TVET college lecturers awarded bursaries to capacitate them, TVET college infrastructure development, number of TVET partnerships established, number of TVET students requiring work-integrated learning to complete their qualifications in places of work. So if you look at the nature of these indicators, we found that it's actually quite, significant indicators that actually speak to capacitating the TVET sector. And it would be an expectation that the higher education portfolio as a whole actually focuses in capacitating these if a need has been identified. But we're finding that you're not actually identifying, or we're not seeing that coming through in the APPs of the department, together with the CET space where, there was an indicator plan for number of people enrolled in CET internships, number of CET partnerships established, and the rest of the, which is quite similar to what was there in the TVET, what I just read out for the TVET as well, which just speaks to the intention to capacitate these, the CETs and the TVETs. And we're finding that not everybody in the higher education portfolio is actually focusing on capacitating these as required. So that's basically our observation when we looked at the, you know, the APPs of the department and its entities. So lastly, I'm just going to quickly take you through the preventative controls. We just wanted to highlight the preventative controls that we feel should be there at the different institutions. I think with all these being there, it would actually avoid a lot of the things that we're actually picking up when we're doing the final audit. So it is within, you know, a request that the committee maybe encourages that these actually are in place at the different institutions. Starting with the tone and culture of the different institutions, you know, that there must be a demonstrated commitment to integrity and ethical values, which is quite significant, and it speaks to the tone of the actual leadership of the institutions. Accounting authorities, and there are different accounting offices providing independent oversight, building and maintaining a strong culture, control culture. Michelle spoke about our focus as an office specifically on shifting the public sector culture, and that is a culture that is underpinned by integrity, accountability, and transparency. Implementing effective consequence management. Again, this is another thing that we are now at a point of actually enforcing this through our expanded mandate. But if there can be those embedded internal controls within the institutions that is enforcing that there's adequate consequence management, it assists with the process. Institutionalizing internal controls, making sure that there's adequate risk management processes, you know, the policies and procedures are actually relevant and communicated. There's commitment to competence, not just having numbers, but the quality of the people is quite important. And then also assessment of the different assurance providers. Michelle took us through the accountability ecosystem, that everybody basically is doing what is required and providing the relevant assurance as required. You know, the procurement of goods and services, that there's those controls that are actually meant to be in place, like making sure that there is adequate procurement plans so that we avoid a situation of the deviations that we're seeing a lot, which is what results in a lot of the irregular expenditure that we're picking up in the public sector. Making sure that there is capacity in the people that are actually doing the supply chain management, having processes, standardized processes, you know, safeguarding of the conflict of interest. So these are just the basic controls that needs to be in place in the different institutions to avoid a lot of the things that we actually end up coming and reporting on. In terms of financial statements, making sure that there is capacity, the people that are actually preparing the financial statements, effective processes that are in place, adequate records management, which is something that we've been communicating in the higher education space for some time, especially in the TVET space with regards to their records management processes, reconciling of accounting records. So basically, this are just, you know, the bare minimum that should be there in the different institutions. Also with asset management, making sure that there's adequate asset, you know, records in place, segregation of duties and safeguarding of the assets. So those are just the internal controls that I just wanted to highlight to indicate that should actually be in place at the different institutions. So now coming back to the APPs, so just one of the like four things that we just wanted to highlight, key areas that we are suggesting the committee may consider in when you're actually reviewing the APPs, things that you should actually be looking at, starting with are the indicators and the targets that are set by the department and the entities, do they meet, are aligned to the strategies or the expectations of the committee, or are they also aligned to the strategies of government? I took you through our roadmap, which just looks at the different strategic documents that are actually in place, which are government strategic documents. So looking at whether the APPs and the targets and indicators that are set by these institutions, are they actually aligned? Are they meeting the expectations of these different documents? Also, your expectation as a committee, you've highlighted here when you're opening, that there's specific expectations that you're wanting to see. So looking at whether these, you know, the indicators that they said are actually meeting those expectations with the ultimate goal of actually improving the lives of the South African citizens. Looking at with the limited fiscus that we currently have, will the target set achieve the maximum impact in relation to the mandate? you know, are the systems that are in place enabling achievement of these targets and indicators? Are we being realistic in what we know what we are setting? And then looking at, will the targets achieve the best results for the citizen? So we always wanting to see the ultimate impact of what it is that we are setting and, you know, planning. Will it have a direct impact on the lives of the South African citizens? And then lastly, our recommendations, specifically with the service level agreements, like I indicated that we're seeing a lot of misalignment, so we recommend that the committee follows up on the inclusion of the important targets that should actually be filtering through in the annual performance report, so that the different areas that need to be capacitated are actually capacitated, like I took you through the examples with the TVET and CET sector. Monitoring of APPs, you know, to monitor progress made on the implementation of the APPs, and then also looking at the impact of the non-achievement of the targets on service delivery. And then lastly, performance versus budget. Committee has requested that from the entities a progress on which details the performance against the budget, because we don't want to be seeing at the end that budget is spent at a particular percentage, but when you look at the actual targets being, you know, being achieved, that is actually a small percentage. There must be that alignment of, you know, the budget versus the actual performance on the actual targets. So I'll end it there, Chairperson. That's our observation on the work that we did on the APPs and our recommendations to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to both colleagues from the AG's office for that briefing, Ms. Macherman, as well as Ms. Mudidra. I would like to check from members if there are any clarity-seeking questions. Clarity, literally, because this briefing, by and large, it guides us, it helps us to do our work as a committee. But if there's any clarity-seeking questions, one from Honourable Makau. Any others? No. Honourable Mananiso. Honourable Izzi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to yourself, morning colleagues, everybody here. I just want to thank you to the AG for that presentation. I think a lot was clear. So I've looked at your annexure that you provided that gives clear detail on what was resolved and what wasn't. Just for clarity for me, when you engaged the department on indicators that needed to be modified or needed to be corrected, of those that were resolved and those that aren't, what were the differing reasons? Because I'm assuming, one, I mean, the departments have been doing APPs for as long as they have. So obviously the basics around how to conduct these things are there. So when you give them advice on how they need to improve on certain indications or certain communication, in cases where they've done so, what would you say was the impediment there? What do you think was missing for them to be able to get to that resolution without you having to advise on it, one? And then two, in cases of resolutions that are, or indicators that haven't been resolved at all, what were the reasons that were provided for you? I have just clarity in that respect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues. Let me start by appreciating the presentation. Indeed, Chairperson, it is a guide. However, I have three questions. One is with regards to the back and forth communication with the department. I just want to find out if you have a specific period in terms of when you write to them and when they need to submit to you in terms of the responses. Do you have a specific period with regards to that? And the other one is with regards to issues of human capital, more especially on supply chain management. Do you have any department or institution within the sector where you have find out that they've got maybe unqualified people to be in specific positions, because I know that, Honorable Chair, as we've been dealing with finances, you would get that at some point internal controls are not that tight as supposed to. So I just want to find out with regards to that. And one is happy about the report itself, because most of the issues raised by AG, it's things that we've been lamenting on as the portfolio committee, issues of people marginalized and vulnerable. How are they included, specific targets on that? And I'm happy that at least on your report, it really shows that now there's a teeth that it's biting to say 1-3 must be done in fact. With that being said, Chairperson, I'm actually covered by the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to yourself. Good morning to all honourable members, Acting Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, all the DGs present, the Council for Higher Education, and everybody else in the meeting. Let's appreciate the work done by. Maybe let's welcome first Chair the input by the Acting Minister. Very interesting comments. We will engage, obviously, we are hoping, because the Acting Minister won't be here, that the Deputy Minister will respond. Maybe the Acting Minister can leave the minutes with the or the notes with the Acting, with the Deputy Minister. My issues are few, one or two, not necessarily issues, but matters to just to get clarity on. Sorry, AG says that since the appointment of the new boss, Metsakane, there's a sort of a new mandate, or they've actually developed a new normal at agency. Maybe let me put it that way. My question is, this new normal, when did you communicated to the entity that this is how now we're going to measure you or audit you? Because my view is that this has an impact on the entities, noting that in the previous financial year you would have audited them based on the old normal, and then so I wanted to check how long did you give them the new normal before auditing them for this financial year. I'm asking this, Chair, because you know I know there's been tension between AG, SA, and some of our entities. Even last year there were some tensions where this entity says no, according to GRAP, AGSA should have given us time to rectify X, Y, and Z, but AGSA did not. And that gives us a problem, because we are then unable to measure whether we have a problem at an institution level or not. So hence I'm asking this question. How long did you give these entities in terms so that they can be able to fix? And in your own view, do you think your new normal, which I believe actually is will assist us a lot, Chair, but do you believe that it will affect audit opinions of our institutions, that you're going to audit in this financial year? If yes, how do you think that is going to affect it? How much do you think your audit opinion is going to change if you were auditing them based on the old normal versus the, if you are auditing them now on the new normal? How will that, or how much change would there be
on your audit opinion on these institutions based on the old and the new normal. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kakao, Honorable Manamiso, and Lutie. Any responses from the floor?
Thanks for the questions and the comments. I'll start with your questions, Ms. Lutie, and then I'll also give them an opportunity just to reflect on some of the reasons that we are given on the ground. So the new strategy was presented end of last year, so in terms of Parliament SCOAC, by Sakani herself. Then we are going through, and that was important that I also bring it here, so we are going through all the entities, all the boards, to present the new strategy. So it's not a... The strategy itself does not take away the normal audit. So we're still auditing against GRAP. We still audit against the Treasury regulation. So in terms of the financial statements and the annual performance report, it's going to stay the same. Nothing's going to change there. But what we will do, and it does not affect your opinion, so your opinion is based on your financial statements. Are you complying with the GRAP standards? Are you complying with your laws and regulations? So that still stays. But what we do want to elevate is to say, over and above that, so if you are saying, for example, let me take your annual performance report. You say to us, you've documented that you've achieved, you've trained 10 learners. You want to train 10 learners, but you only trained 5, and the reason is because you had budget constraints. We are happy with that. That is factual, it's what you reported, we've audited. But we want to know, okay, so if you didn't train that 5, first and foremost, what did you train that 5 in? Then, if you didn't train the other 5, what is the impact that will have on the country? So the country needs civil engineers. You only trained 5, we need 10. What does that mean for the country of that 5 that you didn't train? So that is not an audit opinion matter. It's the insight to say, so what are we going to do now that we are sitting here? How are you going to improve? How are we going to make sure that we do achieve that? And what is the impact? So it's over and above your audit. We would like that to be the conversation, because that is what is the citizens are feeling on the ground. So although we'll say to you, yes, they are unqualified or they are clean, but what does that mean in terms of clean? Are you clean because you just set yourself targets to say you will attend meetings, or are you clean because you are actually doing what is required? So that is the mind shift that we want to see ourselves as an office improve on. So it will not affect your opinion at all. In terms of the APP review, so we started the process for the APP reviews in last year, November. For some of the entities that were submitting, we gave findings, we were following up on the changes. We did share with DHET as well, so we did get some mileage from DHET in terms of also fast-tracking some of the changes that the CEDAS did make. I think there before the final sign-off, I think most of the entities had already corrected their APPs before the final sign-off. In terms of the reasons on the ground, Zama touched on some of the areas in terms of why they are not, why the APP will come to us in the state that they are at. Some of the reasons is lack of review by management. Some of it is really capacity. You'll find that some of the CEDAS would not have a COO or somebody that does check, so it does miss that level of review that is required. And then also some of the reasons we do seize resources. So some of the reasons I'm sure they'll also elaborate a bit more when they do come to you. But those are the reasons that we get. That is what we get in terms of that. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I did touch specifically on the reasoning. Specifically, this is inadequate reviews that are actually taking place, because if you're able to make the changes after we bring it to your attention, you're actually in agreement. It just means that you just didn't pick it up through your review processes. So that's what we're picking up a lot on. But that would be on the, you know, when we look at the targets and the indicators. What we did have a lot of back and forth on is when we looked at the alignment between the SLAs and the department and the APPs, because we got us on, if you look at just the NHR, we had identified a lot of indicators that are actually not included. And we had to have a lot of back and forth engagements with regards to that. And we were finding a lot of where we're hearing that, no, they don't have the budget to be able to do do some of the indicators that are there. But I must say, I think the intervention of the minister, because after we had gone through the process of actually reporting some of these things to the minister, and we saw a lot of traction, because a lot of them are actually included in the APPs now, because when we had to have that engagement in terms of, you're saying that it's not, you don't have the budget for it, but if you look at the nature of the indicators, it speaks to the work that you're meant to be doing. So you can't say you don't have capacity to do that. So it didn't, you know, there wasn't any correlation with regards to that. Hence, we found that a lot of them ended up actually putting them and incorporating them in the actual APPs so that it can actually be tracked, because it's things that are actually important to be implemented by the institutions. So the back and forth was with regards to that. And it could actually be that, you know, if you set as, you know, if you add these things in the APPs, you're actually going to be held accountable for them. And you not including them actually avoids that situation. So we needed to have that, you know, that engagement also with the department in making sure that you have these agreements with the CTAs, but what are you doing as a department to make sure that you actually monitor that these are actually implemented if they're not filtering through in the APPs? So we had to have a bit of back and forth, but I think after the different levels of engagements, because we also had an engagement with the DG and the minister, there was a lot of traction in making sure that actually these are actually included. We still have a few that are still not necessarily putting them in the APPs, but a majority of them had actually gone through and implemented, even with the changes with regards to some of the things that we had picked up on the APPs. A lot of the entities actually went and actually made the changes to those in the process that we actually did. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to colleagues from the AG's office. I trust that members are fine now in terms of that briefing, and we can move on to the next briefing. I'd like to officially welcome Honourable Mabo as well as Honourable Pele. Honourable Mabo representing the Democratic Alliance, Honourable Pele representing the African National Congress. Welcome, colleagues. It's a very robust, energetic committee. A lot of young people in it. Including Mam Sibiya, colleagues from the department who were with us during the oversight would remember vividly how Mam Sibiya was the first one to be on whatever shuttle and was with us till the end in the rain in Venda, Slalang about 10, trying to make sure Minister Mercy that our institutions were ready for the academic year 2023. In many cases, we had a good start. In some, we didn't, and we were very disappointed because we had gone and done all this oversight. So welcome, Honourable Pele, Honourable Mabo. You need to contribute to the energy of this committee. But we look forward to working with yourself. Honourable Mwesi, I want to say something before you leave. At whichever point you will need to leave, but I want to have said this before you leave. We've received an apology, colleagues, from NASFAS for next week, because apparently they are attending some conference in the UK. I said this last week, or 2 weeks ago, when we dealt with the Department of Science and Innovation. We can't accept apologies during this period. Annual performance plans and annual performance reports are really the most quintessential periods or elements of the work that we do, and the period in which you brief Parliament on your plans and you tell Parliament what you did at the end of the year. We can't accept apologies. And it's not about Nompendulo and her 10 members in the committee. It's about the citizens of South Africa. As this committee, we represent a parliament with 400 members. So they can't, and how I said it 2 weeks ago was that colleagues in our sector need to appreciate that they would essentially be interacting with 389 other members. Right? So we are representing them, and that 400 is representing the entire country, so millions of South Africans. So it's not a favor to Nombe Ndulo and the few of us here to come and tell us what you plan on doing with citizens' taxes and telling us how you have spent that money in order to better citizens' lives. Because ultimately we are all given a responsibility on behalf of to lead this country on behalf of citizens. I don't think what is it that they plan to do or what is it that they've done. And NSFAS, it's a reoccurring issue. They have not even come to tell us what they did with the money we gave them for the last financial year. Now you don't even have time to come and tell us what you're planning on doing with the finances that we're still going to give you, even though you haven't come to report yet. So we can't accept their apology, Minister. A plan must be made, and I'm raising it now because I would like the department to lead in ensuring that by next week Wednesday, when we meet, NSFAS is here, be it hybrid or they are here. Our plea was that these APPs must be physical because these are our last APPs for this sixth administration as a committee, so they must be physical, right? So I'm raising it now that please, you need to engage with them. They must make a plan. It's only once that you come and present your plan. It's only once that you come and report on what you've done with the finances. So we really are pleading on yourself as a department to engage with NSFAS to make sure that they are here for that briefing. We've also moved it from Friday members because Fridays are seeming to be extremely challenging with a lot of the responsibilities that we have. So we're going to have a meeting on Wednesday to ensure that it can be physical, and the most accommodation we can make is a hybrid of some sort. But the intent is that it has to be a physical meeting. With that being said, I'd like to appreciate our colleagues from the AG's office for always really supporting the committee in the work that we need to be doing, or the work that we do within the accountability ecosystem. And strengthening our capacity in that regard. So thank you very much. I'd like to then, you are more than welcome to stay with us for the rest of the day, but if you do have other commitments, you are more than welcome to go. I'd like to then go directly to the CHE. It's not the norm, colleagues, that we go to an entity before the department, but DG, as we said earlier on, we'd like to afford ourselves ample time with the department for the engagement. So I'd like to hand over to colleagues from the CHE, which is led by the chairperson, Ms. Memani Sedile, as well as the CEO, Dr. Green. And I'm told, I'm not sure if the CFO is also here, but Dr. Green will indicate, but that is Dr. Mutusi. While we allow colleagues to just... we'll just give at least 2 minutes or so for that particular reshuffle.
Thank you.
Try and settle down, please, and afford the CHE to make their briefing. Welcome to Ms. Memani Sedile, as well as Mr. Green, Dr. Green. I always get in trouble for that. Welcome to yourselves. I'd like to hand over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, members of the Portfolio Committee, the Minister, the Deputy Minister, DG, colleagues from the Department and the AG. It's an honour for us to come and present our APP and the strategic plan for 2020 to 2025. I'm going to do the introduction, and then Dr. Green will take you through the strategic plan, and the CFO will take you through our budget that is linked to our strategy. And I will quickly just want to speak about our council. It's got 25 members, as you can see on that, and there is one vacancy. And there's three types of the members, the ones that are appointed by the minister, and the ones that are co-opted by the council, and then ex-officio members. The term of the members is new. We started on the 15th of December 2022, including myself as the new chair of the council. So I will not go through the names. You can see on that, and I think the presentation was distributed. And just to remind the committee, what is our mandate, or how do we base our strategy and our APP? We are mandated by the Higher Education Act 101 of 1997. Just before I go into there, if you look at our logo, I want to say that we are celebrating 25 years as CHE this year, as our logo indicates, the 25 on the corner. We advise the minister on higher education matters at the request of the minister, and proactively if there are matters that we feel we need to advise the minister. And then we arrange and coordinate conferences that have an impact on higher education. And
sorry, if I can just ask that we skip those slides, please. Sorry, I'm trying to finish time. So let's leave that mandate, and then
Okay. Well.
Vision, mission, then let's leave all of that out. Okay. Let's head straight to the plan that you have. So from around slides... slides... I would start from slide 10.
Can I just talk to slide that just on the context. What is the basis? What do we look at when we do that? We look at global issues, we look at national issues, and we also look at the local issues. that impact on the quality of higher education. And I think some of the matters that were the minister touched on them, on areas like crime, corruption, national and conservatism, social fragmentation and xenophobia. And also globally, your climate change, your environmental disasters, global health challenges, food and water security. And closer to home, we look at inequality, poverty and unemployment, and especially of the graduates that we produce that you find themselves unemployed. And also the changes in the technology around us, that we look at the changing world of work, at that, because the requirements now are changing, and so we should make sure that our students that produce are fit for the world that we find ourselves, the fourth industrial revolution and the 21st century skills. And then the students themselves, the belonging crisis, the identity crisis, and the ownership crisis that they find themselves in. So we take all this into account when you look into that. And then I will hand over to the CEO to then go straight to the stress plan. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Good morning, Deputy Minister and DG. We haven't yet changed our stress plan, DG. it's the fourth APP in a five-year strategic plan, but we will be this year initiating a strategic planning review. With a view to thinking about our next 5 years. So our plan is really packaged around four programs that we use to deliver on our mandates. Management of the HEQSF, the Higher Education Qualification Sub-Framework, is a key component of the work. Quality Assurance is a further program. Research, Monitoring and Advice, and then all our work activities around corporate. So those four implementation programs and then various sub-programs in relation to them. And this provides a structure for our APPs from the first one and including this fourth one. So I'm presenting the fourth APP in a five-year planning cycle, and I've had some key data to explain some of the details within the APP. Just indicate that we have six focus areas that you continue to pay attention to, including in this APP. We are preparing for the implementation of a new quality assurance framework in 2024, a really innovative way of moving and thinking about and working with quality assurance, and I think cutting edge in terms of even international practice. We are still focused on implementing a national round of institutional audits, auditing every higher education institution in the country. We started off with the 26 public institutions, the universities. Those have largely are well underway. All the site visits to those institutions have been completed in the last financial year, and we are now pulling reports together. And we will start to see the first reports coming out of those institutional audits. We bring into the private higher education institutions now. Growing the research, monitoring, and advice function is really a big focus area for the CHE this year. Growing our identity as an intellectual organization and a hub of scholarship for higher education has been a key strategic imperative of this strategic plan. And we've paid a lot of attention to it, and significant growth has happened in this area. Minister Nzimande has asked the CHE to take on a new transformation monitoring oversight mandate, and we are building this into our planning as well going forward. And I'll talk a little bit to that. Building the image and profile of the CHE has been a really key part of the work. Just building visibility, building awareness, building knowledge about what the CHE does in the sector, and then strengthening our regional and international networks. And so we have 45 indicators, output indicators in this APP, and you can see they spread across our four implementation programs as shown in that slide. 15, the management of the higher education qualification sub-framework, 10 relating to quality assurance, 8 relating to research management advice, and 12 focus on the corporate. I'm not going to go through each in detail, Chair. I think members have read the presentation and gone through it. I just like to focus basically where we've changed. And in our reflections and compilation of the APP this year, what we have tried to do is to move the bar in an upwards direction. So where we've been achieving in previous years, to kind of set the targets a little bit higher in this fourth APP, just to stretch ourselves a little bit. So you'll see the green text is about those improvements, improving effectiveness and efficiencies. A really important part of the work of management of the HEQSF is to create a database of qualifications that are offered across the country as registered qualifications on the NQF, SACWA, and to actually register learner records from the higher education system on SACWA. And you can see a number of targets related to that. Previously, with private higher education institutions, the target was 85% of private higher education institutions submitting data and submitting verified data. We're getting closer to 100% in this last one, and so we've moved this target up to 90%. Our ultimate goal is every single institution must be submitting verified data to us, and I think we are getting there. We are building a new Council on Higher Education Management Information System. That will be a system that actually contains learner records, staff records, and qualification records for higher education institutions going forward. We've conceptualized what this management information system will look like, in the next year we'll be reporting our progress in relation to taking it forward. The higher education qualification sub-framework is the framework that dictates what qualifications can be offered in higher education. It's currently under review, and we are wanting to finalize the review in this next year to publish a new HEQSF. And really innovative stuff has come through in our consultations and research, including a new thinking around articulation, around the recognition of informal, non-formal, and formal learning into qualifications, the issue of micro-credentials, the issue of RPL has come up quite strongly. So we're looking to see a new HEQSF that takes us into the next 5 to 10 years going forward. I'm going to jump to quality assurance and then to focus on accreditation. One of the big complaints and criticisms that the CHE has had to endure over a number of years is the slow turnaround time for accreditation of programs. And the criticism that it can't be if we're going to have an agile system that needs to respond to quickly changing external environments, including the world of work. So we've been paying a lot of attention to this and turning around our accreditation processes much quicker. So we've dropped our target for this year from 12 months turnaround time to 8 months turnaround time. And we want to even be better than that going forward. As we introduce the QAF, this will be a big focus. A new way of accrediting will come through the quality assurance framework, which will actually improve these times even more over the next few years. So that's the one thing I wanted to highlight in terms of quality assurance, in terms of accreditation. In terms of institutional audits, you might be wondering why the target has decreased. Yeah. And this is simply because we've now concluded the public institutions, and we are now going into the private higher education institutions, and the audits will be linked to the accreditation cycles. So as they need to be reaccredited, we'll conduct an audit for that reaccreditation exercise. And so we have 10 in relation to the private higher education institutions this year. The quality assurance framework, as I said, is a game changer, and it might be useful, Chair, at some point to have a briefing to the committee on the quality assurance framework and what it means for a new way of working with quality assurance in South Africa in higher education. But it really is moving us into a digital space in terms of quality assurance, managing quality assurance much more digitally, managing data from institutions, building track records of quality for institutions. So we're building the system that enables us to have institutional quality dashboards. So if we had a question at any point in time what does the quality at Walter Sisulu University look like at this point in time? We can point to standards and we can point to performance on the dashboard against those standards that give us an indication of quality. So there's a new element coming in called higher education practice standards. So we'll be developing standards for areas of higher education practice. So online and blended learning will have a standard associated with it. Work integrated learning will have a standard associated with it. And transformation, our view of transformation and taking on the transformation function will be to embed transformation in these standards. So when you think about curriculum development as a standard, you're thinking about decolonization and curriculum reform as part of that standard. So our understanding of taking transformation forward through the work of the CHE rather than as an extra mandate. And so whenever we do a quality assurance exercise, it will be against these standards. And so we start to get this comprehensive view of quality across the sector over time against standards. And so that's really the work that will be starting to move this year and into 2024. As I said, a research monitoring and advice, this work has grown exponentially. If colleagues have been following the CHE's website, you'll note that we published a big number of research reports this year. Research briefs, articles, and so on, emanating from the research that's been done. And we'll continue to do that in the new year and going forward. And then based on this, having conferences, colloquia, seminars, and so on. We are having a seminar colloquia on the 11th of June, which is focused on artificial intelligence in higher education, and picking up the debates on ChatGPT and the threats and opportunities that are starting to come to the fore in relation to artificial intelligence. In terms of research, monitoring, and advice, in the last year we submitted 5 pieces of advice to the minister, three of them proactively and two of them by request. And in the next year we'll also be aiming to submit advice in key areas, including advice that the minister specifically asks for. In terms of governance, I'm not going to spend too much time in here. This is the standard work. Enabling us to manage the CHE as an organization. Our policy reviews are ongoing. Corporate services, big part of our work in the last year and into the next year will be a digital transformation framework plan implementation. We've invested a good couple of millions over the last year in enhancing digital capacity at the CHE. And we'll be continuing to do that in this new year. Staff training is an important intervention ongoing. Our organizational structure, we aim to have 85% of our staffing structure filled on a quarterly basis and then annually. Ms. Mamani Sidiru will talk to this at the end of the presentation. It's just not possible to actually have 100% filling of our organizational structure because of the compensation of employees' budgets and the limitation that the CHE has to work with in relation to that. So even though we have an approved organizational structure, 100% filling of all our posts is impossible, which makes us rely on contracts, peer academic works, peer academics coming in to do some of the core work, and is a significant risk for the organization. Going forward, we'd want to argue for an increased compensation of employees' budgets to enable us to have the staff that's necessary for the organization to do its work. In terms of finance and supply chain, very efficient. Thank you to Dr. Matusi, who leads this work. We have not had any irregular wasteful expenditure over recent years. Our suppliers are paid well within the 30 days. In fact, I think over the last financial year, it has been a 20-day turnaround time for that. A big area of work that we're growing is communications and stakeholder relations. Building advocacy, communicating about the work of the CHE, communicating about quality, building awareness and knowledge amongst the public in relation to, for example, bogus institutions, what would you need to look out for if you want to ensure that the qualification that you want to study is a legitimate qualification, and so on. I'm going to stop there, Chair. Hopefully that's given you a sense and a flavor of what's contained in the APP for this year, and ask Dr. Matisse to talk to the budget.
Thank you, CEO, and to the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister and DDG and colleagues from DHED and also from AGSA. I'll quickly just go through the slides on the budget issues. At a high-level summary, I think the slide that is before you is just depicting the transfer that, or the total allocation that we are receiving from the DHED, which is an implication that we are getting 86% from transfer, departmental transfer, while the two is only for is actually from the projected or estimated cost of recovery and also from the projected interest income, which in total is about 96,399,000. The second slide is just a high-level summary with regard to the issues with how did we distribute the budget in terms of the composition of employees and goods and services. I think the CEO just highlighted the issue around the issue of the fact that the composition of employees, you can see in terms of this slide, is at 40% while the goods and services is at 60%. So this is how the budget has been distributed. And just to highlight to the members, the reason why the budget is like that, our budget process is that we have the internal process in place in terms of the allocation of the budget, and I think most of the issues are touched on slide number 26 and 28. But just to highlight that, is informed by what each core sub-program has planned for the year under, which is 23-24. And the next slide is actually trying to give a budget allocation on composition of employees. You'll recall the previous slide was talking about 40%, but just an indication to the members of this portfolio committee in terms of the different programs that we have. I think CEO indicated that we have about four programs as indicated, and this is the allocation in terms of the composition of employees. I'll highlight the issues why the difference in terms of the percentage of, like, for example, quality assurance. And I'm pleased that for quality assurance is 47, which is the core of CHE, which is standing at 47, while the rest are at 34 and 18 and 6 as indicated in the slide. Next slide. And then these are the reasons which is very critical and important for the members of this committee to note. Actually, the budget allocation is based on the number of employees. I think that is very important, and the salary scales of each employee. It can happen that within a program you only have 5 employees, but it depends on the level of those people that are that are appointed on the program. So that is very important to note. The budget covers 50 funded posts for the year 23-24, which constitute 40% of the total baseline of the allocation as indicated in the previous slide. With regard to that 50, we have 47 which are permanent and 3 is fixed-term contracts from various programs. From a program, quality assurance is constituting 47, which was indicated in the previous slide, and then with the 22 funded posts, which is 19 permanent and 3 fixed-term contracts. While for research monitoring and advice is 13% with 5 funded permanent posts. Management of HQSF is 6% with 2 funded posts, 1 permanent and 1 fixed-term contract. Just to highlight on this one, why only this small number of employees? This is a new program that came through. Hence the issue that the CEO was talking about. It's a program that was just came in, I think, 2 years back to be funded. So we only have the director and the assistant, while the other employees that are working for this particular program, we are paying them as peer academics, so it's contributed through peer academics or fixed-term contract. So you'll see that the number is totally different from the others, and they only have 4 funded posts. So we manage within our own means, trying to reprioritize through as mentor as ESCO, trying to say what best can we do with the little budget that we have to make sure that the work continues. with anything. So we managed to reprioritize within our little budget and try to make sure that at least this program is funded and the people that can do the work, because it's one of the mandates that we need to do. The last program is administration, which consists of 34. And this one is administration, and I think maybe the question will be to say, why 34, why is administration? I think the main issue is that administration, which is a support program to all core programs, it includes also other issues like the liberty and iron gray contributions for permanent employees at the rate of 63,000, I'm sorry, I think there's a missing zero there, per month, which constitutes 5% of the total composition of employees. The next slide is just an indication of the budget in terms of the goods and services for the year 23-24. You can see that we have quality assurance and up to administration, where quality assurance is taking the bulk of the budget at 48. I'm pleased because this is where the bulk of the programs, as indicated from the previous slide by the CEO, in terms of the targets that we are planning to do, they are funded from that, so it's covered on 48%, while research and monitoring is 10%, management of HQSF 11%, administration is 31%. The last slide is an indication of saying how did we come to those percentages and what informs those percentages. The first bullet there is that budget allocation is based on activities that needs to be undertaken to achieve the set strategic objectives of the program as per the APP. And the budget methodology that we are using is a zero-based method and activity-based budget. And the goods and services budget constitutes 60% of the total baseline budget allocation, and it includes as follows: program quality assurance 48%, research and monitoring and advice 10%, while management of HQS 11%, while administration constitutes 11%. And I think the main reason why administration is a little bit higher than other two is because here we're talking about variable contracts and fixed contracts. You'll recall, Chair, that as CHE we are owning the building, so we need to maintain our own building. Hence, there's contracts. So we have contracts to maintain our own building, which are variable. Some of them are fixed contracts. So that is the reason why the administration is a little bit higher than other core functions. And I think that's all I can say from our side in terms of the budget allocation. Thank you, Chair.
In conclusion, the budget allocation that we have is not sufficient if you look at our mandate that keeps on expanding, including areas that is the incorporation of the public colleges into higher education, and also the mandates that we've just been asked to look into, the transformation oversight function that we have to look into. CHE is service driven, and therefore the cost of employment is higher than your normal operations driven entities, but our budget does not reflect this. And as a result, what we do, we end up using service level contracts, contracting staff, and using peer academics to try and make sure that we cover our work and in some cases our critical support areas. But this is a problem because continuity is affected. And also institutional memory, if you keep on using people from outside. So we need to look into our budget in terms of the cost of employment. As the ratio, the budget ratio doesn't reflect this, that we are service-driven, but we need to look into that and make sure that we ask for more money, that we can have the staff that we require, so that we have the ability to employ more staff in permanent positions. And this is also complicated by the fact that there is tight competition within the sector in terms of the skills that we have. You will find that we get people and they stay for short periods, and then they move to the other entities within the higher education. And also in terms of pay, we find ourselves that we are lagging behind with the other institutions that do the quality assurance. And so we need to look into these things to make sure that we have stability in terms of our staff in the CHE. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much to colleagues from the CHE, the Council of Higher Education, which is led by the new chairperson, Ms. Memani Sedile. Welcome, Chair, and all the best to you and your team. The committee is unapologetic about our advocacy for women to fall the ranks. And so seeing a woman at the fore really excites us as a committee. And we commit ourselves to supporting you in the work that you have to do. And our doors always open. Often people feel that the relationship with the committee is that you just come and account. But sometimes you need assistance in order for you to be able to do your work, like you just indicated in relation to the budget, Dr. Mutusi. We note that as well as the committee that you do require a greater budget for the work that you need to do. And I think for us the most important thing is for us to always be brought into clear confidence on what that additional funding is for, so that when we do lobby Treasury or even lobby other spheres of government to budget coordinate. You know, I think we are of the view that you don't always need to have money given, funds given directly to yourself, but if there is a way to coordinate budgets within the system so that you are capacitated to be impactful in the work that you do, then you can also try and figure out how to do that. And so thank you very much for that. I'd like to note hands from members who have any comments, questions, recommendations. I want to, from my side as a note hand, I'll start with Honourable King, Honourable Mananiso, Honourable Ngobo. Okay, so I'm going to go Honourable Ngobo, Honourable King, Honourable Mananiso, Honourable Izzy. I want to acknowledge the deliberacy that the CHE has spoken to in terms of transformation and decolonization of the curricula. Or of the academics, which is very important. Want to welcome the work that you intend on doing within the private sector or private institutions, as well as bogus institutions or qualifications. I need colleagues to assist me in understanding something. So when citizens say the TVET qualifications are not of a particular quality. There's this narrative that the quality of education that is taking place in the TVET sphere is not par excellence. There's this idea that the quality of curricula in the TVET sector is not relevant. How do we, what role does the CHE then play in terms of that, and what becomes the relationship with, for example, the department's TVET program and yourself? I mean, we went to Limpopo beginning of the year. We had a situation where in one of the qualifications, mechatronics, so the college has taken it upon themselves to move faster than what the curriculum is offering. So there's auxiliary support, and it's frustrating because they're saying, look, there's certain equipment that there needs to be bought, but it's not supported by the curriculum. So we have to look outside of our budget to get that that equipment or whatever it is, even if it's textbooks or software, or, you know. So, you know, what becomes the relationship there? If you can assist me in that understanding. And yeah, I think I'm fine with that being said. So, Honorable Ngobo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members and officials from Department and Council, and the Deputy Minister as well.
Chairperson, I just have three quick questions. The first one relates to Program 3. I see that there has been a budget decrease. Program 3 deals with research, monitoring, and advice. There has been a decrease from 11.5 million to in the 2022-23 financial year to 10 million in the 2023-24 financial year. So I just want to find out what the reasons are for such a decrease and what impact will it have on the performance of the program going forward. Also, the second one relates to the same issue of budget cuts for Program 4, sub-program corporate, and also just to find out the reasons and what impact that will have on the performance of the program. The last question, Chairperson, relates to the accreditation of institutions of higher learning. And almost every year we hear sad stories of students having registered at institutions that are bogus, that are not registered. So I just want to find out about the work that the council has done, and I noted that they said something on communication and advocacy, and what are they doing to maximize their communication so that students recognize the importance of checking with the Department of Higher Education if the institutions that they attend or that they go to are registered or accredited. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone, and also from my side, but late to say, I welcome all your presentations today. I also just have two questions. So when I have been covered much on the budget, so I'm not going to talk on the shortfall, but when we look over the MTSF period, we see, especially at universities, there is a slight decrease when it comes to the uptake of first-year entrance and also in general access, decreasing access to universities. So I'm a bit concerned if these institutions with the Department of Higher Education will be able to meet the NDP 2030 mandate on the number of students that will have access to institutions. Have you had any discussion around this matter with the Department of Higher Education? Then also, what has been coming up a lot lately, I've had numerous people contact me, was the time frame in order to get the certificates from the Department of Higher Education in particular to ensure that they can then access employment. So have there been any discussions on the duration of time that it will take in order to issue certificates to TVET students in order for them to access the job market at an earlier stage, because we find that most of these students would have completed their TVET qualifications, they go and work, but then that's where the delay is. There is no set standard on how the form should look that they should fill in. There's no set standard on the duration of time that they have to wait, and then most of them get rejected on numerous occasions from the Department of Higher Education. And then lastly, according to the Higher Education sub-framework, there were 8 institutions that were originally targeted for assistance with regards to the development and implementation of the relevant policies. If we can just get an understanding which of these institutions were targeted and the criteria that was used to identify these institutions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Let me start by appreciating the report, Chair, and say at least there's a light at the end of the tunnel with regards to what is the work of Chair. I think one is covered on some of the issues relating to the budget cut, relating to insufficient budget as well, and the issue of policies as alluded by Honorable King. But I have 3 questions as well. One is with regards to what the chairperson has said on the issue of a vacant post on those 25 people, when are you anticipating to actually fill that particular post? Do you have a specific plan on when do you want to make sure that you are, you know, full as a composition of the board? I think, Chairperson, in this portfolio committee, we need to acknowledge the work by Chair with regards to the bogus institution. We know it's one of the things that people feel that as government, we don't have anything to do with most of the institutions that are there not registered. So it is important that we acknowledge that at least there's work that has been done in terms of ensuring that those that are not legitimate, they are closed off. And some of us, we are even seeing you on King Moja Love 157, you know, when you are being interviewed, why do we have this? You didn't know about this particular institution and so on. So it really shows that there's a need that you touch base in terms of awareness with regards to what people need to be aware of. And I want to check with regards to that. Do you have a process or procedure or system in place as the department where people can just randomly call for complaints or whistling blowing? And if not, are you anticipating to have such a department? Because it really shows that there's a need that you have a system in place to really deal with other bogus institutions that you don't even know of as the chair. The other thing is with regards to your peer employees. I think, Chairperson, this word of peer, it's the new normal of incorporation of people, perhaps professionals who are unemployed and graduate and so on. But my question is, I want to check with the department, how are these people employed in the system? Is it through learnerships, internships, or fixed term? Because I think as much as we would want to deal and speak to issues of employment, poverty, and inequalities, there are issues that we must not, you know, just do for compliance. I want to check how do you then get these bodies to be part of the institution. And it is important to note as well what you could have said when you were presenting, to say you're dealing with serious issues, so you can't be taking any body just to respond to the issue of unemployment. So I just want to get sense in terms of who do you have in that particular space. Lastly, Chairperson, is the issue of the transformation framework on comprehensive digital services. I want to check if you have cost implications, and how are you going to make sure that you fund that, and what are the resources now that you have as Chair in terms of ensuring that seriously, we move into digital space. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe let me also congratulate the Chair of Conference of Education. Appointment of the chair. Congratulate all other members. A number of them are familiar faces, Chair. Congratulations to all of them. Wish you guys all the best in your term as board members. Maybe since I'm on the issue of board members, maybe let me start by checking how many of the board members were there before in the previous term. So how many of you have got a second term and third term and so forth in your board? Council for Higher Education has got a a clear mandate that you must implement systems of quality assurance for all higher education institutions. You must monitor the state of higher education system, and you must contribute to the development of higher education through intellectual engagement. Now, the first one is on the quality assurance. Are you doing quality assurance for all public and private universities in South Africa? I'm asking this one of private universities intentionally, because that is where we would have a problem of this fly-by-night institutions. Some of them may be not even fly-by-night, but some of them may have qualifications that are maybe bogus would be a wrong word to use, but some of their qualifications may not necessarily be accredited in this country. So are you doing quality assurance for all of them, including including private ones? Congrats. the new council. We wish you all the best. We hope that you will serve the institution well. You are celebrating 25 years this year as a council. what are the plans of commemorating, celebrating this milestone? What are you doing? What are you planning on doing? And if you are planning on having a big party, when will that happen? In the committee, we don't have too many people who party, but I do attend even on their behalf, and that's not the only thing I do on their behalf. If we eat there, I'll eat mine and also for them, mm-hmm. And that goes also for drinking water there. So maybe share your thoughts with us about celebrating the 25 years. You see, this one it's not a small thing. CEO, I know that you also happen to serve on Umalusi. When Umalusi turned 20 last year, 20 years last year, Umalusi had a beautiful event, DJ, which looked at what they've been able to achieve Ulalo, and they communicated it beautifully, so that you don't have people who don't like progress reporting on your behalf. That, you know, growing up, I thought Umalusi, the only thing they used to do was to go and defend on national TV the leaking of examination papers. That's all I knew, because that was all that was being reported. But when you sit there and they are communicating their achievements, the past 20 years, from the first council, the first CEO, and where they came from. So maybe even ourselves, Council for Education, that is what, you know, we don't want the situation where when people speak about Council for Education, we want to say you're not communicating to people about fly-by-night institution. You know, I believe that there's a lot that, I mean, since the beginning of the sixth parliament, for an example, it was through yourself that many programs were identified not to be meeting the minimum requirements. At WUSU, for an example, at Univen, if you remember, Univen had something with a services seat about funeral palace. It was yourself that uncovered that there's a 1, 2, 3, 4 problem with this process. But instead of being given the props that you deserve there, we don't communicate that much. So maybe when we celebrate this 25 years, let's look at what is Council for Education, what is the impact that you have, your framework, sub-frameworks that you are developing daily or weekly or monthly, what is their impact on normal South African citizens. And I think maybe lastly I must end off by supporting the question that the Chair, Honorable Mukacho, asked. Almost everybody, when they wake up and they want to criticize the system, they speak about the curriculum that we are offering at TVET College is not being relevant to the economy of this country, or that being outdated. Have you spent time there? And what is your view really about I know the question is broad, because if you were to look at NCV, you would concentrate. If you were to look at NATED, you also have to concentrate on that. But what is it that you can do to help us answer this question? Is it really outdated? I know that there's also some work that you're doing with the QCTO on behalf of the skills branch maybe you have identified critical skills whatever there in that space, but on this one, the TVET space, is the work that you guys are doing there? If so, what kind of work have you identified? Probably jobs of tomorrow, and how the TVET can play in that space, and what kind of curriculum do we need in order for us to respond to that question? And what is your answer to somebody who in the morning you open your radio, SAFM, and somebody says, "Oh, there is a waste of money. NSFAS is pumping billions into TVET space, and there it's not really." If I were to answer them, I don't think my answer would be right. It may not necessarily be political, but I don't think it may be coming from honestly objective point of view. So hence I want to ask yourselves from that end of the team, the professionals, maybe assist us on this issue. Thank you very much, and I apologize for taking longer.
Thank you, Chairperson. Everybody has already said hi. Hi again. So two things, Chairperson, and I think on the first one, the DG might know by now that this is a trend that he would notice that I like a lot, which is about the digitizing the space. But one, I want to emphasize this, right? 25 years is as old as I am. And that means that in 25 years, the council would have had an opportunity to see, to spot vacancies within the system or holes that exist, and come up with innovative advices on how to fill those holes in order to ensure that we transform the sector as a whole. So I love the conversation that is being had about a transformative agenda that is decolonial in its approach. But what's also very important is conversations around approaches that are relevant to one now, in terms of the demand and the supply. There's very little work that is being done by the council and within the sector to catch up to the fourth industrial revolution that we find ourselves. So while your monitoring tools are going to be digital moving forward, and which is important, the other thing that, in my advice, needs to also be caught on is the offering of education across institutions, irrespective of the types, in a digital form. I think I have emphasized quite a number of times in this committee, in your absence in some cases, that if we are going to deal with questions of access to institutions of higher learning, there's no need for us to go build institutions all the time when we have a good substantive number of students who can really get what they need to do done at the comforts of wherever they have to do. And that's what a digital world affords us. It affords us the privilege to be able to participate irrespective of where we are. And what that does is, one, it opens up access not only for people who need it, but it also deals with the issue of choice, that people get to decide at which institution they get to study and are not clamped down by geographical location, right? The second thing that does also is it deals with cases of students who have to choose between going to work in order to put food on the table and getting education. That is a choice that no young person has to do in this country. And so being able to open up access to tertiary education in that way could deal with that. The other thing that we all have a problem with is student accommodation. We've had conversations about, yes, it's great, we're going to reprioritize unutilized or underutilized public buildings for accommodation. But again, if I come from a rich or middle-class family and I can log in at home, I don't need to go ask for accommodation at school. So I have a place to stay altogether. The other thing that also does, it maximizes access of as many applicants as possible within the space, right? So then your focus on for physical attendance at schools becomes people who really have no other way of getting access to the sector than to really physically be on campus or wherever. So these are the kind of this is the kind of thinking that I would employ the council to maybe look at and to see how you can make it attractive, make it sexy, in collaboration, obviously, with DSI and its entities that are specifically working on research and innovation. So that's just my advice in that respect on how we can catch up to the fourth industrial revolution. And of course, there's a whole lot of other reasons that you yourself could automatically think of that I need not list right now that would make this idea appetizing to look at. The second thing that I want to talk on and emphasize is, I know the chairperson has already mentioned it in her opening remarks and in that Lucia tried, but the reason why it's important for me and to re-emphasize is because the committee has already had engagements previously with the department, and the department, I would also appreciate that in your opportunity to respond, you would get this. But for the council in particular, when I had written to the minister on this offering of mechatronics in particular and requested a response, but in their response there was really like a lack of understanding, or not even, for a lack of a better word, I would say laziness to try to understand the deficit between what is being offered within TVETs and what the council is working on in terms of the generation, the improvement, upgrade, panel beating of qualifications and their quality. So, but the last response we got was that the offering of mechatronics in particular is something that is not part of the review that is being done. Has that changed? Can we expect that inclusion to find expression in the new release of accreditations that is coming forth or not? And again, there's still information lagging behind on the specifications of which offerings are we working on, what's the council working on, and what recommendations there are. So all I need there is just clarity in that respect. But yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Colleagues, those are then the comments, questions and recommendations from members. Some, I think, are matters you need to reflect on as you go about doing your work. Some do require immediate responses. And if there are others that you feel that need to be packaged and put in writing, please feel free to do so. I am wary of the time. We're now at 11:30. I don't know if 10 or so minutes will be okay, 10 to 15 maybe, but I think 10 should be okay for you to make your responses. And DM, I do know you need to leave at 11:30, so after they respond, if there's anything you'd like to say before you go, then we'll also afford you that. All right. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. We will share the responses. I will start with the ones that I will respond to, and then Dr. Green will continue. In terms of transformation, I think it was just an advice of us going forward, taking that mandate of transformation into the space of higher education. The quality assurance of private higher education institutions, the ones that have been accredited and registered with the department, we do look into that. because we do the institutional audits, as we showed in our APP, that we select a number of institutions per annum, and we look into them and see which ones we would be doing. But the ones that are not accredited, then we wouldn't be doing anywhere around them. The department has got a register of all the registered institutions, and the department does, I think, every beginning of the year to caution students or parents that before they register their students, they need to look if the institution is registered or not. And we did talk about this as well in our last council meeting, to say, are we doing enough in terms of the awareness? And we need to embark on an awareness program together with all other institutions around it, and institutions, the department, and the council. And one of the ways that we should be doing is to actually going to the radio stations, because the radio stations in almost all the languages in South Africa, and we need to do that so that people understand, because it is sad when you see the people being taken for a ride and they've paid a lot of money, and then they find that their children have been registered in bogus institutions. And then the other question that I will take is the one on the number of the council members. The vacancy that is there, it is the ministers that will have to look into that. But we have written to the minister to say that there is still one vacancy on the board of CHE, and we are waiting for the minister to look into that. And the number of the members that have been reappointed. There is seven that are now on their second term of the 4 years, and then there's two that have been co-opted. They're also on their second term, and there's six new members appointed by the ministers, and the other nine members ex officio, they do not have a set term because it is linked to their positions in where they are. And then there was a question on whistleblowing about the bogus institutions. CHE does have whistleblowing line to report anything that is related to us, and we look into those and see if it's not something that CHE can do, then we will direct it to a responsible body that will have to look into that. And the monitoring the state of higher education, we do that through our quality assurance. And yes, it is both public and private that we look into that. And the first part in terms of the quality assurance is through accreditation, because we need to look at the on the programs that they want us to accredit. And so we'll look into the quality of that, and then the institutional audits that follow up to make sure that they still are adhering to what they said they would do in terms of their accreditation that they've been given. The correction on the APP, I think CEO and CFO will look into that and will correct that. Then the budget questions, the CFO will take into that. In terms of plans to celebrate 25 years, we do, but we want to link it to the quality assurance framework that we will be launching. So it will be linked to that, and when we get the details, we'll share it with the committee. And I think when we do that, yes, it was advised that it is an opportunity for us to showcase what is it that CHE does and what have we done in the 25 years, and so that not other people tell our story, we tell our own story. And then in terms of the TVET qualifications, Dr. Green will look into that. And the fourth industrial revolution, I think we are moving slower, but we will try and pick up our socks and move and not and be left behind by what is happening. And I think from my side, this is these are the questions that I will take, and then Dr. Green will take the others.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to rush through some answers. I think in terms of digitizing the space and online and blended learning, it is a big focus of the CAG. We've just recently concluded a task team that looked into online and blended learning as a result of movement from COVID-19. That task team has concluded and submitted a report, and we can share a copy of the report with you. But what we will be doing now as a CHE is to undertake a team review across all higher education institutions that want to continue in this modality without them needing to reaccredit their programs on the basis of the team review. We'll be providing approval to move into online and blended learning for institutions that meet the criteria. So we'll have a standard around it and ensure quality delivery, because there is a big danger of people moving into this but not being actually capable of doing it. Honourable Lett, in terms of the 25-year celebration, certainly plans underway. Maybe you can diarise a QAF conference dinner and launch on the 19th of September. We're targeting that date. We are having a series of dialogue events. The first dialogue event I just mentioned on AI coming up, but there will be four dialogue events also commemorating the 25-year dialogue events. One of the big things is the CAG history is actually not documented. It's in the minds of people and in random documents here and there. So we are using this year to compile a history of the CAG. And then we'll use that as an advocacy document to portray what the CAG has done. In terms of the TVET, the CAG does not have oversight in terms of quality assurance over the TVET sector. Its oversight is in relation to the higher education institutions, which is the universities and the private higher education institutions. So all our quality assurance, whether it's accreditation, audits, reviews, are on those. So we don't have oversight on the curriculum in TVET colleges as well. Although there is a need for us to collaborate with the QCTO, given the new occupational qualifications framework that now goes up to level 8 beyond its previous levels. And that will be the one contribution that the higher education sector makes to TVET is through lecturer education. So promoting quality lecturer education in the universities for TVET lecturers and community education and training college lecturers. Our digital transformation framework is really key. We have a framework that's been approved by council and then yearly plans. In the last year, we implemented 20 projects in our operational plan. But the funding was really through rollover funding and funding that became available. So there is a need to actually identify dedicated funding to take forward our digital transformation work outside of an ad hoc approach that when funding is available, we're able to do certain things. Certainly for this year, we have a project where we're wanting to build a new system, and we have a start of funding for that. But certainly a need to think about the funding deal. I indicated that we have oversight on the universities and the private higher education institutions. What is becoming a bit of a concern to us is our oversight on the public colleges and the fact that that area is still quite grey. So the nursing colleges, for example, are offering higher education qualifications. The veterinary colleges are offering higher education qualifications. The emergency medical care colleges are offering higher education qualifications. The agricultural colleges. And beyond that initial accreditation of those qualifications, the CHE hasn't had any strong quality assurance oversight, which is a concern. And I think we need clarity on how these public colleges are being positioned, and we need then a role for the CHE to be taken forward in relation to these. Particularly that they're offering higher education qualifications, sub-framework qualifications. And then obviously there's a funding requirement, because this now is many more institutions coming onto the table in terms of higher education. Honourable King, I responded to the college issue, and so the certificate issue actually falls outside of the mandate of the CHE. We will look into the issue of the decreases. I hadn't picked it up, a slight decrease, but we do publish a vital statistics publication yearly that tracks enrollments, graduations, and so on. So we will look into that with a view to trying to understand what the trends are, and maybe to pull some advice around that. Could be an approach example, CIG takes. Let me stop there and hand over to Steve.
A quick one. Thank you, CEO, and the chairperson, to the chairperson and the members. A quick one with regard to the issues of the finances. I think the two issues was the issue of the decrease in terms of program 3 and 4. I think it was more on the budget injection, the rollover that was there, that was catered for in the prior years. Hence, there's a difference decrease when you look at the figures, when you try to do comparison with what we have in the previous years. So it was mostly basically around the issue of the injection because of the rollover funds, and which you normally call it adjusted budget. So that's the main reason. The other issue, which is the last point, was the issue around the correctness of the funds. Yes, I think Honorable Lizzie noted it. I think I was just doing some calculations quickly. Yes. I think I picked up it was more on goods and services, which I think will make sure that we correct it. But I think in total, in the high-level summary, the total allocation is 96.99. So it was more on the goods and services, which I think it was a typo error. We'll have to correct it. And it was mostly on the administration program, not to all the programs. I think the issue that was raised also was on the peer academics. I think the member raised the issue of peer academics. We are using peer academics, but we are using peer academics not on, especially peer academics based on their skills and competency to assist us in the type of the work that we need to do. And they are not part of the COE. They are a separate in terms of agreement with ADSA. They are not part of the compensation of employees. Previously, we were calling them consultants. And in the previous portfolio committees, it was raised an issue to say, our consultants is very high. Then CG came with this name to call it peer academics to try to make sure that it makes sense because we are peer-driven organization and the peer academic. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I think we've covered most of the questions. And if there is a question that we haven't covered, the committee can just remind us and then we can respond in writing.
Thank you very much to colleagues from the CHG, the Chair, the CEO, as well as the CFO. This brings us to the end of our engagement with the CHE. You're more than welcome to remain. If not, you are free to go as in closure. We're just saying that there could be more work that you need to do. Thank you very much. Before you stand, I just want to allow DM to say a word or two so that we can also release him. To go to the next engagement that he needs to be at.
Thank you, Jefferson, also to the Council on Higher Education for their presentation. Just a couple of things. Maybe if you could indulge me, Jefferson, if we could join in extending our condolences to the family, friends, and colleagues of Professor Khwadi, the late Vice Chancellor of the Vaal University of Technology. He passed on Tuesday. I have personally been in touch with the family, and the university council and staff have also been in touch with the family to try and see that we can give him a proper send-off, and I think we will have to check what the details are. I think there are several memorial services that have been organized both by Vaal University of Technology and the University of Northwest, the Mafikeng campus, where he was Vice Chancellor. I think we took on Professor Khwadi was the first Black Vice Chancellor of the University of Northwest, and I think he's immensely contributed in the post-school education and training sector. And so we really want to ask the committee to also join us in extending condolences to the family, friends, and colleagues, because it is actually a loss to the system and to the sector that has contributed so much. The second thing, Chairperson, is to note your concern around the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. Apology to the meeting. We had a conversation here with the DG, and we will ensure that the NSFAS does participate at the portfolio committee to present its annual performance plan and also the budget and whatever other presentation that needs to be made. I've also noted some of the points that the AG has raised, and to note that from their comments, most of the issues have actually been resolved between them and the department. And I think you know, they indicated that the they've worked quite closely with the DG and our minister to make sure that those issues are resolved. And I think as it relates to some of the issues that remain unresolved, we'll have to look at that and find you know, some way of resolving those. I was trying to count them. I think there are not very many of those issues, and I think we should be able to find you know, comfort. The DG Chairperson will be leading our DDGs in terms of the presentation for the department's APP. And I think what excites us, just to add one or two points from what Acting Minister Mercy had flagged, is that emphasis on the APP for us is around the expansion of the system. If you talk about increasing the number of students at university, at TVET colleges, community colleges, if you're talking about expansion in terms of infrastructure, you know, we're talking two new universities, we're talking eight new campuses, TVET colleges, two at least within the current financial year. You know, we're talking three community learning centers within the financial year and more within the medium-term framework. We're also talking expansion in terms of the number of artisans that would be trained, increase in terms of the number of graduates on an annual level. And yes, there has been, you know, a decline, I think as the DG will show in the report, in terms of certain you know, professions, areas, and partly because of COVID, but also partly because some universities had to review you know, the enrollment in those you know, critical areas. But I think underpinning this annual performance plan for us is basically how do we expand the system, both quantitatively and qualitatively. You know, those kind of interventions, I think that you know, the DG together with the DDGs and CFO, you know, would expand on those. This is the, as you rightly said, penultimate, I think, APP and budget. It's going to usher us into the 30th anniversary of our freedom and celebrations. And so we also see this as important. We want to use, as it will be illustrated, this budget to continue to using it as an instrument to make a lasting impact, not only within the immediate, but also for you know, for future generation. And that's why we see this budget and its progressiveness and the kind of outputs or results that we'll have to see in the long term. So those are the few words, Chairperson, and if I can then be excused to join the cabinet committee. I believe that the team that would be led by the DG would be quite capable, of responding to the questions that will be raised from the portfolio committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DM, and thank you for the commitment that you've also made in ensuring that all entities do come to bring us into confidence on how they will utilize not our money. We wish this money was ours, but the funds of South Africans that we represent. So that being said, colleagues, I'd like us to take a body break until 5:12, and then we will take the department. Thank you.